Welcome to The Dwelling with Alante Hicks and Raina Gittins. We are two not-so-urban, not-quite-suburban Atlanta girls speaking transparently about everyday lifestyle concerns and community needs. We will share stories, issues, and concerns of adulting in the 21st century, providing a space for everyone to speak.
Today, we are guided by a quote from Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And with that, Alante, why are we here for this podcast?
So on March 8th, International Women's Day, we slept outside for homeless youth with the Covenant House Atlanta, which serves youth experiencing homelessness up to the ages of 24. And the purpose of the sleep out was to raise awareness and funds to support the Covenant House so that they continue to provide shelter and services to homeless youth in need. So, how we got here was that about a year ago or so, our church, I kind of set up a class where our church served to teach a class at the shelter. And I had heard about Covenant House like over the years, just having worked in the nonprofit space. And I knew that they did sleep outs, and I always thought it was like a really cool like fundraiser. So this year when we got the email, because I had been on their mailing list for years, but when we got the email, I was just like, oh, this is it, I'm doing it. And it was International Women's Day, so I felt that that was perfect. So I invited Raina to join in with me.
And what was my response? I was like, huh? What? Sleep outside? That sounds crazy. But it also intrigued me a little bit. I got curious, like, sleep outside. That was something new to me that anybody was doing to try to fundraise or give back to the community. At the time, I didn't really know what or why they were sleeping out, really. What enticed me to go ahead and do it is that first I wanted to make sure that it was something that would be really helpful for the youth that we would be serving. It's one of those things where you want to make sure that even though you're serving this group of people by sleeping out, you're not doing something that might be considered stereotypical for them or somewhat presenting them in a way that they don't want to be represented. So it was, I think in our experience, it was a situation where the youth themselves were excited that we were doing something like that. It wasn't just something that, you know, volunteers decided we're gonna sleep out for the homeless and that they weren't involved in a part of the whole process. So that helped me get excited about it. But the whole situation was new for me. It was a little bit difficult at first getting into the fundraising. So we had to do some things online to get people to give toward our cause. And so that was trying to promote it as well and keep up with promoting every single week and get people persuaded to wanting to give can be a little bit harder than it looks. But I also learned that we can, when we ask people to do something and we are passionate about it and we believe in the cause, it makes it a little bit easier to just go out there and do it without that nervousness that you might have in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because it's all about where you're coming from and your motivation, and people will get that. And if they don't give, it's okay. If they just repost, it's okay. And if they don't do anything at all, it's okay, right? At least the awareness got out there. And the other piece, the actual sleep out experience, that was pretty intriguing as well. So Alante can tell you a little bit more about it. But from my experience, we were a bit afraid about the weather. So the week coming up, I was super nervous that it was going to rain and that it was going to be really cold. But thankfully, we only had a little drizzle, so it was better than I thought. But sleeping on the ground outside was not comfortable. And really, every time I woke up in the night, I remembered why I was doing it. And then I remembered that somebody's sleeping outside because they have to, that they're not getting a chance to go back home in the morning. And it just put me more in a place of, and I can never be in their shoes. I might never truly know or understand what they're going through, but it put me in a more humbling space to know that people do this every day for differing reasons, and we have to take notice of it and give them voice. And I think that's what this project did. So for you, Alante, what were your favorite moments from the experience?
So my favorite moment from the actual night was just getting to have a couple hours before we actually went outside to sleep, to spend time with the youth and hear their stories. And it kind of helped get rid of any thoughts we had about why a youth might end up homeless. And then also the situations that they deal with, the problems that they face, and kind of like my thoughts about them, but then how like my thoughts don't matter when like there's a need. So so my favorite moment was just having a chance to spend time with them and getting to know them just as people better, and realizing that their situation, especially like their living situation, does not define them, and that we were part of something that could give them or put them on a different path or change their lives, forever. And just that this was just a moment in their lives.
Awesome. Is there any particular story? I think you were telling me about one when we kind of split up at one point and you spoke to a different young lady than I did. Was there anything from that you took away?
Yes. So mostly just that, like, even when people are different from you, you still need to treat them with love and respect, and just how damaging it can be when like people don't feel accepted, and how that's all it takes. Like one kid feeling that they aren't accepted for who they are leads to them experiencing homelessness for however many years, you know. And so a lot of from what we learned, like a lot of the homeless youth are a part of the LGBTQA, you know, that community. And a lot of their homelessness starts because someone in their family or someone in their village or whatever did not accept them. And so not just it's deeper than just like not agreeing with someone's lifestyle or their choices, but like you have to really have, to me, you have to really have a lot of like hate in your heart to abandon or neglect or abuse someone just because they're different from you. And so I think that was the thing that stuck out to me the most, that like no matter what I believe about how things should be or how you should live your life or the things you should and should not do, like I never want anybody to feel like not loved or not more than not loved, but like hated because of their lifestyle choices. And that goes, you know, bigger than just sexual preferences or gender identity, but just like anything that you can do in life. Like, that just really made me sad to hear that people were abandoned by their families because of those things.
Yeah, it's just that so many people are, we don't know their stories, and sometimes we don't realize how people get into the situations they got into. Mm-hmm. And we have to take account for that. So I get you there. Do you have a least favorite moment at all from the experience?
I wouldn't say a least favorite moment necessarily, because I mean, I thought, like, anyone who asked me, I'm like, it was amazing. It was like eye opening, and I cannot wait to do it again. But what I will say is I was reminded just through this experience that representation matters. And so if I had to change anything, it would be to encourage my circle to get more involved and to be more present, to show up more in their community, serving, you know, especially when it comes to, like, the youth and, like, our future generations, like, just being more present in their lives and, like, the things that go on with them, because, you know, it was only a handful of us. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a difference. I mean, I know it does because of some of the things, yes, that were said. So
yeah, that was definitely one of my biggest concerns going into it from the beginning. At the start, we actually went to a kind of, I guess it was try to get volunteers involved in the sleep out. So they had this wine tasting, and it was, I guess, right near Piedmont Park. Like, this, I think that might be considered the Highlands. Yeah. Isn't that right? Maybe the Highlands area near Piedmont Park. But anyway, it's upper middle class, wealthy level.
I don't even think it was middle class. I think it was just
beyond
upper,
middle class.
The upper class.
Just upper class situation that we're going into at this house. And I'm like, oh, so I thought we were going to be serving the youth. This is, you know, we're going to a very wealthy neighborhood in Atlanta to talk about serving primarily people of color and Black youth. And so that immediately caught my attention. When we got into the house, there was maybe, had to be almost 40 women there. This was particularly for International Women's Day, so that's why it was really promoted for women. And all of the women were middle-aged white women. And there may have been me and Alante, and then a handful of other Black women. I don't know that I saw other groups per se, at least not from the outside. I wouldn't know if there might have been a few other people of color there. But that was the first piece that stood out to me. And at that moment, I was like, well, what is the, you know, racial ethnic makeup of the people we're about to serve? Because I didn't really know yet. But then I found out. So that was really concerning to me. And it started getting me to question, you know, if we're going to be sleeping out, how will these kids feel about the majority of the people sleeping out being older white women who may or may not, try not to be, you know, not to assume their own past, but who may or may not have identification with the group that they're serving. So I think Alante had some some interesting experiences in these events as well. So what you got to share with us?
So it was two situations. So the night of the wine tasting, there was a woman who, like, I noticed her earlier on in the night because I remember kind of just, like, looking out the side of my, like, my view and, like, kind of caught her, like, staring at me. And so, you know, I didn't think anything of it. I, like, went on throughout the night. But obviously very aware that, like, it's about four, maybe five black women in this room amongst the other women. So by the end of the night went on, everything was great. We talked a lot about child trafficking, sex trafficking, and abuse and all these other things, and just kind of got more information around, like, who the people were that we were going to be serving, and then, like, the how, you know, by the sleep out. And we got a chance to sign up and decided if this was something we wanted to be a part of. And before we left, I mean, I left feeling excited. And before we left, a woman, an older white woman, of course, came up to me and took both of her hands and, like, grabbed my head and was like, "You are just so cute. And I just love your hair." And it was like, whoa. Like, I felt kind of like,
violated?
Yeah, I mean, I felt violated. Obviously, she was, like, all in my personal space and she put both of her hands in my head. But I also just felt like, you know, just like I was just a prop on display or something.
The token.
She just, yeah, and she just, like, had to just touch me and let me know that I was just so cute. Mm. And, you know, and it was like, obviously I have natural hair, and so my hair was, like, out. And she just, like, "I just love your hair." And it's like, wow. She may just love my hair and she may just think I'm so cute. Like, the way she went about it, she may not understand that, like, that made me feel some type of way.
Like you were on display as one of the five,
yeah, like,
out of 50.
Just such a cute little black girl.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm just like, whoa, you know? So that was interesting. And one of the other black girls who were there was like, "Don't kill her, girl," you know. And, like, as we walked away, and it was kind of like one of those moments where that woman may not understand that, like, you made me, if I didn't know that I was one of the few here before that, you let me, you made me aware that, like, you're different, you know, like, I'm different. I'm a black woman wearing this, you know, like, curly fro, and you just, I stood out, you know, and, mm-hmm. like, I was different, and I didn't, like, fit in there necessarily. So, anyways, we left that event. I was still pretty excited about it, you know. I wasn't, she was just one woman. I wasn't letting this one woman kind of, like, turn me off.
My fear was that that's what these women do to the kids that they're serving. Like,
yes.
Are you going up to these little black girls when you go to serve them and touching all their hair and saying, yes, how cute they are? Like.
Yes. No, I definitely felt that too. And I felt like, you know, those were one of the times where you're like, they need to know. People need to know. Like, you know, she wasn't someone who I knew. You know,
right.
It's not like she knew me and was like, "Oh my God, Alante, you're just so pretty. You're just so cute." Mm-hmm. And, like, "Oh my hair, God, like, I love your hair." You know, it didn't come off like that. It came off as, like, she had been staring at me most of the night. And then before we left, she just had to, like, come up to me and grab my head and be like, you know, like, "Little black girl, like, you're just so cute," you know? And it was just like,
bless your heart.
Yeah. And so I kind of felt like some type of way. But like I said, I was trying not to, you know, I definitely didn't want to let, like, one person out of the 40 or 50 that were there kind of, like, turn me off from the entire thing. So that was that. The next week we went to the Covenant House to take some pictures for our fundraiser campaign. And this is where we got to meet some of the youth who shared with us, like, the amount of nights that they were homeless, that they slept out on the streets. And so, you know, there were youth there who slept outside for 60 days and 100 days and 161 days and, you know, all of that. So that was kind of cool to get to, like, meet them. And just, they were, the youth that I met, they were really excited and very welcoming, like, for what we were doing. And so, but one thing that stuck out to me was that one of the youth, I was talking to him, he was like, So what organization are you a part of? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, you know, most of the women who do this are a part of an organization, or they're doing it with their job or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, no. Just me and my friend Raina. Like, it's just us. You know, we're not part of any group or anything. And he was like, oh, okay, so are you a blogger or something? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no. Like, why do you say that? And he was like, well, because, I mean, young black people don't usually do this. And he was like,
unless they're blogging about it.
Yeah,
he was like, using it for their own promotion.
Right. He was like, young black people don't usually do this. He was like, it's mostly older white women who do this. Like, you know, and he was like, I mean, which we appreciate, but just it's not somebody who, like, I can relate to, you know? And so I was like, wow. And that made me feel sad because it kind of goes back to something that I had been thinking about or feeling for so long, just that, like, people want to feel, like, cared about. People want to feel loved. People want to feel, like, you know, just, like, they're not forgotten. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that just made me sad to just know that sad, but then inspired at the same time that, like, we have a lot of work to do, and, like, people of color are needed, and representation matters, because these groups that we're serving need to feel like there's hope. You know, they need to see themselves in someone else to be like, yeah, I want to be like that when I get past this, or I want to be like that when I grow up, or, you know, whatever have you. But just, yeah, it just made me feel like, yes, I have even more of a reason to be doing this, because this little black boy never seen anyone who looked, or has not seen, you know, he hasn't seen many people who look like him who aren't doing it for a reason, like to, you know, to show on their blog or to talk about, or
a part of their, a lot of the people, if they, some of the, there were black women there, but a lot of them were part of a company.
Yes, it was their job, their organization, who, you know, they were doing it together. So, yeah, that just really stood out to me, and I definitely won't forget that.
Yeah, it's something that is an issue that I think is prevalent, like, in the service industry. And it reminded me of the HBO show Insecure. And in that show, Issa actually works for a nonprofit initiative called We Got You. And they go out and help youth in schools, and primarily working with, like, Hispanic, Latino, and black youth. I think it is set in Southern California, so that's kind of the youth population they're focused on. But what's really interesting about that show and some of the things it brings up is that We Got You is led by a white woman, and it's a majority white staff, and Issa is, like, the individual black woman in the room when they're making decisions about what activities to do with the kids. It's kind of that situation where she has to either be the person to speak up or listen to these white women or in white men talk about how they're going to help these black and Hispanic kids who they don't know. And it's not that they're not trying to help or anything like that. I don't want to get the picture wrong. Like, there's people, we need our allies. We need people of all races to come together to solve the issue and solve the problem. It's necessary. But the people who you're serving also need to be a part of that process, so that you are actually doing a valuable service, right? And so what happens, and We Got You, in one of the episodes, there's many, but one episode, they are actually recreating their logo, and the woman that owns the nonprofit actually created a logo with, like, her hand, which is a white hand, holding up the little black kids. And so it was that whole rhetoric of, like, the white savior saving these little black kids from oppression, and it was the struggle that we deal with every day when we're we're saying, well, we like your nonprofit. We're happy that it's there and that it's helping and that you're putting your money back into the community. What we don't like is the idea that the privileged group that in some ways, sometimes, not all of them, but sometimes perpetuate some of the systemic issues that cause the problem is also now considered the savior, you know, taking out the fire as well. And so it's that weird dichotomy between who serves who, and it just causes numerous levels of stress for Black women and Black men who have to be placed in these settings, as well as the communities that they're serving. And so Alante's kind of been working in and with nonprofits for a while now. And so I know she has a lot of different experiences as being sometimes the Black face, the Black female in the room. So do you have any that come to mind where you've had to be that voice?
Yes, I mean, I feel like that a lot of times. Mostly that I have to, not just necessarily like be the voice, but also like, yeah, you just have to put up with like the people who you're serving with who, you know, may not look like you, their questions of like, well, why do like, well, why do you guys, you know, do this or, you know, and it's kind of like, wait, what do you mean? Like, we're all so different, you know, like that would be if I, you know, if I did the same thing to you, like, oh, why can't none of you white people dance? You know, it would be like, wait, you've never seen like a white dancer before?
It's like saying like, that one different group of people are all the same.
Right. Yes. And so, you know, and just in my experience from working with different nonprofits, like a lot of the social workers are Black. A lot of the frontline staff who deal with the youth on a daily basis, those people may be Black. The people who are the overnight at these shelters, they're Black, you know? So these, the group that we're serving, like they're having contact with Black people, but they're the Black people aren't the decision makers, mm-hmm. like in these groups, you know? So it's like the Black people are having to have the people who run things, who are in leadership, who are on the boards, who are the decision makers, who give the funds, they decide how things are going to be done. And so, you know, sometimes that causes issues because it's like we're not realizing or taking into account like what the population needs versus like what they think we need. And so I know that's like always a big problem. One thing that I did really like about the Covenant House was they had like a youth council of mm-hmm. some sort, and the youth council was a group of youth at the shelter who were responsible for like planning the activities, and they will also discuss just like things going on in the shelter if they wanted to talk to the leadership about something. And so I thought that was like a great idea because, I mean, I've worked at shelter before and I've like never heard of anything like that. And then especially that it involves youth, it like really gives them like some power to feel like we are involved in what's going on with us, you mm-hmm. know? So I really like that they do that. But yeah, so I mean, I feel like I've had like so many different experiences, but it hasn't been until maybe I would say like the past year that I felt more like aware that like, oh, this is a problem, you know, because it's great. Like you said, we need everyone. We need everyone's help to, like, solve these issues. But everyone, especially when you're serving a group that doesn't look like you, like, we all need, like, the education on, mm-hmm. like, how to do it, you know, because I feel like I've been, you know, involved in, like, the nonprofit sector for a while. And it's, like, even the sleep out experience was just, like, wow, that really opened my eyes to, like, something new, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's, like, there's just so much to learn. And so much we can be doing better at, like, overall, everyone.
Yeah, definitely get you there. And with the Covenant House, they are really good, I think, just from being on the outside, getting to see a little bit, or at least what they showed us of what they do, is that they do give voice to the youth that they're serving. Yeah. So I did think that was good, too. But I think we just looked up, you know, how their system is set up and how the business portion of it is set up, how Covenant House is arranged hierarchically speaking or bureaucratically speaking. And we noticed exactly what Alante said. When we were there at the Covenant House, much of the staff that we were introduced to were African American. Then we had some people above them, their bosses, that were white and black as well. Then we go online, Covenant, that was the local Covenant House for Georgia, Atlanta, but there are other Covenant Houses around the country. And so when you go online and you look up their board of directors, yeah, that's all wealthy white men, to be honest. It's primarily white men that are the decision makers for how this nonprofit runs. They're serving an underserved community of black people, but it's ran by wealthy white men. And so I did some research to find out a little bit more about nonprofit setups. And there's actually an Atlanta employment lawyer, Helen Kim Ho. She wrote a blog post on a blog called The Nonprofit Revolution. And she said that a lot of the issues in nonprofit work and service is systemic, and it comes from how nonprofits are set up. Well, first, the vast majority of our charitable dollars come from wealthy white men because they're the 1%. They have the money to give, and when they feel like trickling it down to the rest of us, they trickle it down. And then we have the nonprofit sector really caters to that funding support. So when me and Alante went to the wine tasting and we saw that it was in a upper class neighborhood in a really nice house and primarily assuming upper class women, white women that were giving toward this, and it was a wine tasting, which is a little bit different for, I mean, I don't necessarily assume that the community they're serving is drinking wine. And so it made sense. The funding support they want is from that group. That's the group with the money. So that's who they're primarily catering to for funding. And then we get the assumption that, well, we asked the question, me and Alante walked away asking the question, well, why aren't our people here? Why aren't more black people here? We're not on a pedestal for going. We just, you know, happened to find out and we went. But why aren't other people like us involved? And it's from what Helen Kim Yo explains is that many people of color and women, middle class, lower middle class people, is that many can't afford the low pay of a nonprofit life. So even to get a job in a nonprofit, many people are going to be taking a pay cut. And they also can't get unpaid time off work to serve. So if you're working day-to-day salary out, non-salary hour-by-hour job, I mean, if you don't work, you don't get paid. So you can't get that time off. And then even something that I was thinking about with my own age group is like, what upper middle class people call their leisure time. So once they get off work at 5, they might have some time to, you know, hang out, do whatever. For us, it's the side hustle time. Like, we leave work at 5 p.m. and then we go into another job to get additional money to help, you know, to help ourselves. So we're always working, it feels like, just from my perspective. It feels like millennials, females, people of color are always hustling. We don't have that wealth built up in our families to be able to take leisure time and say, oh, you know, I don't have much to do today, let me go serve. It's like, no, I'm always trying to work. So it's just difficult to keep up with it. And I'm not trying to make excuses for our community at all. I still think we can get involved. We can find ways. There are people in our community who are doing really well, right? This is not, everybody isn't, you know, going through, you know, tough times. People are doing well. And so there are ways of getting involved and using your time. And sometimes we just have to think out of the box on how we can do that. And we also have to say, hey, it's a priority of mine, because I see that there are people in the community who are just like me, who have stories that are very similar to mine, and they identify with me more than they identify with some of these other people, and I should get involved too. And now you have a more diverse group sitting around the table. You still want, you know, white people, black people, it doesn't matter, black people and everyone across the spectrum to be around the table. And I think that's what we're talking about here, is not getting rid of anyone, but making sure the table is colorful and everyone's giving their voice to serve these communities. So, since Alante is the expert on nonprofits, we wanted to try to end this on a good note with helping people find ways of getting involved that they may not have thought about before. So, Alante, you got any ideas for us on what we can do to try to maximize our time and our money and put ourselves in that table to represent the people we serve?
Yeah, so one thing I always say, and I said this the night we were, the night of the sleepout, when we were split up into groups and we were with the youth, the young lady who we were talking to, who was staying at the shelter, she was saying how she is looking forward to getting to a place, what she was doing really well. She was, like, in cosmetology school and was getting an own apartment, like all these things. But she was looking forward to being able to, like, give back one day. And one thing I said to her, and I say to people all the time, is, like, never underestimate how much you can do, like, with what you have right now. And so we don't have to look at, like, you know, once I make my first million, then I'm going, you know, take all this money and I'm going to give it to this organization. Like, there are things that we can be doing all the time on a daily basis, whether we make $1 an hour or if we make $100 an hour or $1,000 an hour. You know, there's things that we can be doing. So, you know, even for me, I know, like, the past year, I would say, I hadn't done as much in the community as I once had. And so that was, like, something that was very important for me to get back to this year. And, you know, there were a lot of transitions in my life. So I was, like, leaving my job and, like, all these things. So I was going to free up time regardless. But I was reading a book, and it was saying, like, you know, waking up an extra hour early every day, that gives you 365 wow. extra hours a year, and that adds up to 15 extra days worth. So just think about how we always say, like, there's not enough time, but it's like, one, we make time for the things that are important to us. Mm-hmm. It's important to most of us that we eat and that we live and survive. So we spend 8 or more hours at work because that is important to us, you know? And so I don't think it's much to ask for you to spend a couple hours a month, even if you just had 1 or 2 hours a month to, you know, to give to someone else or to give to an organization, to lend your gifts and your talents or your money, if you have it, to help, you know, a group of people. You know, I tell people, like, give up one luxury a week, you know, like, if it's going out to eat, like, not going out to eat one day, not getting your Starbucks one day, like, if you just didn't get Starbucks one day a week and could save $5 and that mean that you have 20 extra dollars a month, that's $20 that you can take to the dollar store. You can buy 20 toiletry items or whatever have you. But just, like, there is so much we can do with, like, so little. You can clean out your home and donate any, like, gently used items, clothing items, or, you know, things that you have, shoes. So I just feel like the smallest things can make, like, a huge impact. And so I would just encourage everyone to pick one thing that they care about and make it a priority to look up, Google, like, organizations that relate to that thing. And even if you don't have a lot of time or a lot of money, just think of, you know, figure out the small ways that you can help. Once you find an organization, you can reach out to them, get in touch with their volunteer coordinator, and just let them know, hey, I don't have a lot of time, or hey, I don't have a lot of money, but, you know, what are some ways that I can get involved? And those people would be, like, more than happy to help you help the people they're serving. Sometimes it can be as simple as making phone calls for them to potential donors. That's something that you can do at home, you know. So there are ways to help, and I just feel like that is what it's going to take to, like, really make, we can make a difference, you know, like, but we can make, like, a huge impact and change the world, literally, if everyone just did, like, a little bit. You know. And so I just would encourage everyone to do that, to get involved with an organization or find somewhere that you can, a nonprofit or a charity that you can give to, but especially for people of color, like, just know that you matter.
Your face matters. They want to see
your presence matters more than anything. Yeah, more than I mean, money matters, right? Money, right. We need money to live.
Sometimes they just want to see your face.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. Just being able to see you and be like, wow, like, somebody who looks like me cares about me, and somebody who looks like me is doing this, and I want to be able to do that. Or somebody who looks like me, who maybe came from a similar background as me, and they
have a testimony or story that can share to encourage me.
Exactly. So I think that that's really important. I think we learned from the sleep out experience that that is really, really important and necessary.
Right, because these kids need encouragement, because sometimes, like, the money, yes, they need to be clean, they need to have food, but a lot of their situations, they had one bad moment, but it continues. Like, it's repetitive.
Yeah.
It becomes, like, a repetitive cycle, and they need someone to help change their mindset to get out of that cycle. And sometimes the best people to do that are people they identify with.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's just that we, you know, like, you and I and anyone else who is, like, active in their community, it's just, like, we have a responsibility. You know, why we decided to talk about this on this episode today was we have a responsibility to not just, you know, be a part of an experience, but, like, sharing that and helping other people get involved. I would love if next year on International Women's Day, I had, you know, 20, 50, however many of, like, my girlfriends there, you know, and just, like, people who look like me, so that we can really just show up for these kids, you know, and, yeah, just be there.
And sleeping outside, that's free. It ain't comfortable, but it's free.
It's not comfortable, but, you know, people get intimidated by, like, the fundraising part.
Right.
But, you know, we can sit here and be like, it's not as easy for me to fundraise as it is for Mary Jane, because Mary Jane has parents and she has friends and family who have so much money. And she can just ask, and they're, like, willing to give them, you know, give her all this money. And while I may, you know, we may not think we have that, but you will be surprised how many people are looking for something to do with their money, or some way that they can give. Because there are people who are going to say, I don't have the time, but I have the money. Mm-hmm. You know, I found that last year when I went on the missions trip that so many people would say to me that, you know, I'm probably never going to go on a missions trip because one reason or another, but I have the funds to be able to support you to for you to go do the work, right. You know? So just ask, you know, and don't be intimidated.
It's
and
all in our heads.
Even if people have $5 to give you, like, that $5 got me, you know, past my goal, you know? It's mm-hmm. like we were a part of raising more than $81,000 for these youth. That's huge. Right. So regardless of how easier it may have been for someone else, you know, it's like I was a part of that. I contributed to that by just sharing with people who are a part of my network. And it's like, well, that was the goal, just raising awareness. So.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we end today with a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. Everyone can be great because everyone can serve.
So if you have questions about our sleep out experience or would like more information on how you can get involved, then you can reach out to us via DM or private message on Instagram or Facebook at The Dwelling Pod. And we look forward to hearing from you.